Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by, and welcome to Espacio's conference call to discuss the third quarter of 2011 results. This event is also being broadcast simultaneously on the internet via webcast, which can be accessed on the company's IR website, www.espacioparticipasoys.com.br/ir, together with the respective presentation and the earnings release. We would like to inform you that during the company's presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. We will then begin the Q&A session when further instructions will be given. In case you need any assistance during the conference, please request the operator's help by pressing star zero. This conference call contains forward-looking statements that are subject to known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause the company's actual results to differ materially from those in the forward-looking statements. Such statements speak only as of the date they are made, and the company is under no obligation to update them in light of any new information or future developments. I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Eduardo Alcalá, CEO. Mr. Eduardo, you may proceed.
Hi, thank you, and good morning, everyone, and welcome to the conference call of Espacio's results for the third quarter of 2011. As usual, I'll begin today's presentation with the highlights for the quarter and then hand it over to Rogério Melzi, our CFO, who will comment in further details our results. After that, we'll go straight into the Q&A session. Let's get started with slide number one, which is available on our website. As mentioned in our earnings release, the third quarter of 2011 was very, very positive and confirmed that Espacio has given clear signals towards sustainable growth with value creation. More than 61,000 new students enrolled with us through the intake process of the second semester, a 26% growth over the same period of last year. Of that, 45,000 were students on our on-campus programs, and 16,000 were on our distance learning courses. Our students base totaled more than 247,000 students, a more than 14% growth over last year. Therefore, our net revenue increased more than 15% to 288 million reais. And as mentioned earlier, very important, here at Espacio, an increase in net revenues comes together with margin gains, and it was no different in this third quarter. The margin expansion was once again due to our successful management model based on centralization and scalability of our business model and the permanent measures pursuing the streamlining of our operations. We posted important gains in personnel costs and G&A expenses, which offset our losses in PDA. At the same time, the companies acquired during the year began to generate significant margins and contributed to our margin expansion. In the quarter, highlights go to Estácio Atual in Roraima and Estácio Faterni in Natal, which both operated above 30% EBITDA margin. Our net income posted an excellent performance up to 31 million reais in the period, a almost 23% increase over the same period of last year due to the great EBITDA performance. Moving now to slide number two, I'll comment on an important decision in our disclosure and policy procedures. Starting this quarter, we are discontinuing the concept of non-recurring items to determine our EBITDA. We will report and carry out our analysis based on EBITDA only, adjusted only for operating financial revenues. This means more transparency and straightforwardness in our disclosures and in our figures towards a simple thing, one company, one EBITDA. An extraordinary one-off items will be disclosed and treated within the explanatory notes and discussed with you all when they take place. In slide number three, we present our consolidated EBITDA in such a new presentation methodology that totaled 47.3 million reais for the period, a 39% growth from third quarter of last year, and a margin expansion of 280 basis points for the period. Growth in our students' base, which generated growth in revenues of 15.6%, combined to the efficiencies and synergies that we were able to generate, brought to us a very attractive performance in EBITDA. In the same store sales concept, which means before any impact or contribution of the acquisitions made throughout the year, we also present a very positive EBITDA performance. EBITDA ex acquisitions was 43.6 million reais, a 15.9% EBITDA margin, and an increase of 2.3 percentage points in our EBITDA margin. Note that acquisitions in the first half of the year have already started producing very attractive results, contributing to improve even further in a sustainable way our EBITDA for the period. So now I will turn to Melzi, who will give further details on our results, and then we will go to the Q&A session.
Well, thank you, Okalai, and good morning, everyone. I will start with slide number four to talk about the evolution of our student base. And once again, we are very, very pleased with our results in that matter, because for the third admission cycle in a row, we were able to post an all-time record enrollment. This quarter, more than 60,000 new students enrolled in our on-campus and distance learning undergraduate courses, without considering enrollment at units that were acquired since the beginning of the year. New on-campus students total 45.5 thousand, which is 18.1% better than last year. We also had 16,000 new students in distance learning programs, which is almost 57% more than the same time in 2010. Considering our enrollment renewal rates, which remained pretty much in line with our historic average, despite an increased delinquency and the strict application of our credit policies, plus the 10,000 new students from companies acquired during the year, our total student base finished the quarter with 247.8 thousand students, which is almost 15% above the third quarter 2010. It is important to notice that, as we already mentioned in the previous earnings release, our student base has finally started growing again in a year-over-year basis, which marks a new phase of expansion for Estácio, this time we believe a very healthy one. Moving now to slide number five, which shows our operating revenue. Our net operating revenue totaled 288.3 million reais in the third quarter of 2011, due to the 14.6% growth in the student base, while net operating revenue excluding acquisitions totaled 274.1 million, meaning a almost 10% growth over the same period of last year in what we call the same stores concept. The on-campus average tickets came to 430.4 reais, which is a 4.3% increase in relation to the same time of last year. Excluding acquisitions in the semester, the average ticket would have increased by 3.7%, reflecting our strategy to pass inflation through our prices, which has been our focus in recent cycles. We expect the ticket to increase a bit in the fourth quarter, since the strategy of the campaigns we have been employing this year sacrifice the ticket in the quarter they are launched, but make up for it in the following quarter. Average distance learning ticket was 170.1 reais per student, an increase of 1.6% over the same time of last year. Moving now to slide number six, which deals with the cost this quarter, and I wish to highlight that the cash costs show a 2.4 percentage points gain compared with the third quarter of 2010, mainly due to the constant evolution of the academic model and to the increasingly efficient academic planning, which is pretty much sizing of the classes and professors, better professors allocation. Personal costs in third quarter 2011 related to layoffs amounted to 4.3 million reais, which were significantly lower than what happened last year, third quarter, which was around 7.6 million reais. Now, on slide number 7, we will comment on the SG&A expenses, excluding depreciation. Selling expenses were equivalent to 7.6% of net revenue in the third quarter of 2011, which is stable in comparison with third quarter of 2010, as a result of a slight increase in the ratio of PGA to net revenue, around 0.3 percentage points, offset by a decrease in advertising marketing expenses. This slight increase in PGA reflects a scenario of higher delinquency levels in the first semester, as we had already been talking about, which ended up reflecting in our PGA only now because of our provision criteria, which is building provisions after 180 days of delinquency. By the way, we continue to make these provisions, or to provision 100% of our debts, which are overdue for more than 180 days, which, as you see later on, gives total security with regard to our receivables. We are watching an increase in the number of FIES agreements. At the end of September 2011, we had nearly 13,000 students in the program, and also greater use of credit cards by students, which helps reduce the risk of delinquency. On the other hand, the scenario of high delinquency levels still holds, which sacrifices our cash and increases the PGA risk in the future. To counter this unfavorable trend, during the quarter, we launched a large-scale internal campaign to mobilize our company around the theme of delinquency. We are adopting stricter managerial control, developing systems to increase the visibility of delinquency drivers, spreading best practices from units with the best performance on this issue, and launching an educational campaign called Socially Responsible Student, involving coordinators and professors in the discussion of students' responsibilities, obviously including paying their tuitions on a timely manner. We are also blacklisting and taking legal action, meaning lawsuits, to recover the debts from delinquent students in order to create an environment that discourages delinquency within Estácio. G&A expenses, on the other hand, declined 0.6 percentage points in comparison with the third quarter of 2010, mainly due to the 1.3 percentage point decline in personnel and the 0.7 percentage point decline in outsourced services, which offset the 1.1 percentage point increase in provisions for contingencies and the 0.3 percentage point increase in other expenses. Once again, we noticed the efficiency of our organizational model in the G&A expenses, given that the increase in these expenses has not kept pace with our revenue growth. Moving now to slide number 8, we will talk about PGA and receivables. We can see that at the end of the third quarter of 2011, our average receivable days, without considering FIES, was around 62 days. 60 days excluding acquired companies, which is very much in line with the 59 days at the end of the second quarter, but is still much higher than the 47 days in the same period of last year. The tuition receivable item remained in line with the previous quarter. The increase came pretty much in the credit line, card line, which to a certain extent shows an improvement in credit quality, given that it eliminates the risk of default for the company. FIES accounts receivable grew 5.6 million in the quarter. These accounts receivable consist of educational credits for students who took out loans from Caixa Econômica Federal and are used by Estácio for the payment of federal taxes. In other words, they represent tax credits without any risk of delinquency. In addition to the credits in accounts receivable, the balance includes additional 9.7 million reais that were already converted in certificates and are awaiting utilization or buyback. The variation in the PGA balance in third quarter 2011 results from the fact that as of fourth quarter 2010, Estácio began to adopt a policy to write off gross receivables overdue more than 360 days, as we explained in details in our last earnings release. Please remember that once these receivables are written off, the same amount is written off from the PGA balance, thus creating a neutral effect in net receivables. Also note that Estácio's policy on provision for doubtful accounts is not based on estimates or subjective decisions, but rather on actual delinquency figures. To put it clearly and simply, every R$1 overdue for more than 180 days gets provisioned, which gets evident in the table we will see on the next slide. So, moving to slide number 9, we can see the aging of our accounts receivable and of our agreements. Starting in the upper table, I would like you to know that the total receivables overdue for more than 180 days, amounting to R$56 million, is exactly the amount that appears at the balance of PGA in the previous slide, confirming our earlier statement that 100% of the receivables from former students is already provisioned. The increase in the not yet due line over third quarter 2010 relates to the campaigns to renegotiate with the students and to improve delinquency rates, given that for students to renew their enrollment, they should first negotiate their debts according to the terms set by Estácio. Table further down shows the aging of our agreements, which are exactly the result of these negotiations. A mere 16% of total receivables come from students' renegotiations, in line with the percentage disclosed in the second quarter 2011, around 15%, which shows that the period for renegotiations between July and September did not have a significant effect on agreements. Moreover, analyzing the age of the agreements is crucial to monitor the percentage of securities already overdue more than 60 days. At Estácio, only 20% of the agreements are in this situation. This scenario is only possible because we remain very firm in our credit approval policies, using rules like not allowing debts amounting to more than 5 monthly tuitions to be renegotiated, or preventing students that are ready to graduate from proceeding to the next semester if they have any amount overdue. Moving on to slide number 10, we will comment on the results of the units acquired by Estácio since the beginning of 2011. As Eduardo Alcalá mentioned, we once again are striving to improve, to increase our transparency by showing our organic growth separately from growth through acquisitions, and more than that, by highlighting the performance of each one of our new units. You can see Estácio Atual, which is our first acquisition in this new phase, and therefore in the most advanced phase of integration. It posted a EBITDA margin of 37.9% in the quarter, reflecting the excellent performance of the new unit in Boa Vista, thanks pretty much to the top-class management that they have there, also to a smooth and successful integration process, as well as to the benefits of implementing the Estácio academic module in the second semester for new students, something we do in a pace we consider secure for the integration process. Our operations in Natal, Estácio Fall and Estácio Fatern, posted positive margins in the period, and especially Estácio Fatern, which presented a EBITDA margin of almost 40%. Both the units recorded good enrollments, and even though they have not initiated the migration to the new Estácio academic model, they already benefit from the implementation of what we call the Natal cluster, together with our regional unit in the city, seeking synergies and economies of scale and thus increasing margins. We are preparing ourselves to switch the academic model by January 2012, which should bring us significant gains in efficiency, quality, and margin in our new Natal cluster. Academia do Concurso is going through several adjustments already expected at the beginning of the transition, but has managed to break even in the quarter after losing money in the second quarter 2011. And they did that by implementing actions to accelerate the migration of its back office to our shared service center and also to stabilize their daily activities. At the same time, it began to structure its platform for distance learning courses and is preparing to sell a platform of short-duration courses that will contribute to revenue generation. On slide number 11, we have a graphic presentation of the 2.8 percentage points gain in the EBITDA margin this quarter in relation to the third quarter of 2010, mainly due to the better management of personal costs and expenses, which offset the step-up of the INSS, the increase in textbook material costs, and our selling expenses. Tasso's net income totaled 31.1 million reais in the third quarter of 2011, against 25.3 million reais in the third quarter of 2010. This 22.9 increase in net income is the result of a 39.1 gain in EBITDA and the 4.1 million improvement in income tax and social contribution line. This was offset by the decrease in financial results, largely due to the reduction in the cash available for investment, and also the 3.1 million increase in depreciation and amortization due to higher capex that happened in the previous 3 years. Also note that the sale of our Paraguay operation represented an accounting loss of 2.2 million reais, which further reduced our net income in the period. Moving on to slide number 12, in the upper box, you can see our operational cash flow, pretty much our EBITDA, was enough to offset the change in working capital resulting from the increase in receivables and also investments made in what we call the maintenance capex, which is pretty much the recurring capex, leading to a positive operational cash flow of 21.3 million reais. Looking at the bottom table, we see that discretionary capex, pretty much the new academic model, replacement of computer network and expansion of greenfields and so forth, the stock buyback program and financial results were the main reasons for the 5.9 million reduction on the cash position in the quarter, which ended at 62.3 million reais. On slide number 13, we have the same information for year-to-date analysis. We can see that during the first 9 months of 2011, operational cash generation totaled 113.8 million reais, which was enough to meet the demands for working capital and maintenance capex, reaching a positive operational cash flow of 20.7 million reais. On the other hand, discretionary investments in expansion acquisitions totaled 114 million reais, which together with dividend payments of 38 million reais were the main reasons for the reduction of the initial cash position, which was compensated by a loan from the IFC. I will now pass the call back over to Alcalai, who will finish our presentation.
Okay, thanks, Melzi. And just like before jumping into the Q&A, I'd like to make my final remarks and convey to you all, you know, how enthusiastic and happy we are by announcing such good results, and the fact that these results are the clear and direct consequences of a very strong and tangible organizational culture that we implemented in the company. When I mean a tangible organizational culture, I mean a group of very solid and stable management team, all working together and coordinated towards, you know, the sustainable growth of this company based on quality and growing the profitability. That, to us, is one of the major and most important assets in the company, you know, the quality of its people, the quality of its management model, and its very disciplined, sustainable growth strategy going forward. Because of that, we are very, very confident about the prospects ahead of us. So with that, we are more than glad to get any questions that you may have.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the Q&A session. If you would like to ask a question, please dial star 1. If at any point your question has been answered, you may remove your question from the queue by pressing star, then 2. Our first question is from J.C. Santos of BTG Pactual. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, or good morning, depending if you had lunch already or not. My first question regards to the cost of the tablet. We know that we had those 6,000 students with the distribution of the tablet in Rio de Janeiro, the law students. I was just wondering if you could explain us if this will continue to go on the cost line, or if it's going to be a capex. We haven't seen it in the breakdown on the capex line. So, and I was expecting it to come as capex and then depreciated on the P&L. So, just trying to understand a little bit on that matter. And the second question regards to some of the financial costs. We have the taxes on credit cards and the credit card fees. going on the financial cost. I was just wondering if you could explain us a little bit how much is it and how should we forecast that due to the increasing participation of credit cards, and if it sort of compensates a little bit the boleto bancario, the emissions of those credits for the students. So if you could just also give us a little bit of a glimpse on that matter as well. Thanks.
Well, this is Melzi. We will try. We haven't had lunch yet, so good morning for you. As for the tablets, we bought our first set of tablets. I think it was around 6,000 tablets, if I'm not wrong. This cost has not shown in the balance sheet yet because we're still negotiating the final terms with Sam Toshiba. Our supplier is going to show very soon over the next quarter or so. It's going to be a CapEx, right? It's going to be capitalized over 4 years, I think. We're still talking to our external auditor, Ernst & Young, to define how it's going to show. But once we're ready with that, yes, we're going to show this to you once it happens. We also have the copyrights. Copyrights will always be operational expenses. It's going to show. It's going to flow into our regular EBITDA results. So I believe next quarter we will be ready to, explain to everybody how it's going to work. So far, just to summarize, we bought around 6,000 tablets. Total cost was about 5.5 million reais. This is going to show very soon in our results, and we're going to let you know as soon as it happens. It's going to be CapEx for sure, okay? And why is going to be CapEx? Sorry, go ahead.
No. Just as a compliment, if you guys are going to put that as, I mean, if it's going to go as CapEx, the evolution of the cost line with the materials, that eventually as the tablet gains share in the participation of the delivery of the materials, instead of having the textbook materials, we could expect as well that line would eventually go down, therefore possibly, let's say, impacting your EBITDA or something like that. So is there any sort of changes in the way that we should model that? Because from a cash flow perspective, it doesn't make any difference, but from P&L, EPS, et cetera, no, not on EPS, but probably on the EBITDA margin, you'll see the impact on that, right?
You are absolutely right. But again, remember, around 50% of the total cost of what we call textbooks currently is not related to the machine, right? It has to do with copyrights and also shipment costs. So we're talking about roughly 50% of the cost you see today. You are right. By the time we get more and more tablets in our system, yes, we should see a reduction in that line. You are right about the cash flow. It doesn't change anything. Hopefully in the future it's going to improve our cash flow because we are starting talking to companies that may, buy space in our tablets, generating some sort of extra revenue. So it should favor our cash flow in the future. But for the short term, it should be neutral in terms of cash flow. As for EBITDA, yes, you're right, you should see an improvement. However, it has to do with the pace at which we are going to implement the tablet. We are doing that in a very careful way because you need to understand how this is going to work in terms of logistics, operations. It is something absolutely new, and we are dealing with that so far. So we started with the law courses in Rio and Espírito Santo. We've just announced that we're going to expand that to law and engineering courses all over Brazil in 2012, and we haven't decided yet what's going to happen after that in terms of how quick we're going to implement that technology. But we will let you know, and we're going to show this in a very open way, as you probably wonder. As for your other question, if I understood properly, you want to know how much we are paying for the credit card companies. I believe it's around 3%. I think it's something regular in the marketplace. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I believe it's around 3%. And yes, obviously, it should somehow be compensated by the boletos, bancários, and so forth. But the point is not that. The point is of convenience. There are students who want to use credit card. They ask us, right, to use credit card. The point is that we are not using in a very broad way so far because of technology constraints. So 100% of what you see in terms of credit cards has to do with renegotiations. We allow students to pay their negotiations with us using credit card. We hope that by January 2012, they'll also be able to use credit cards to make their regular monthly tuition payments. We think we will be ready for that in January 2012, which is good for us, not only because of the risk, but also because of the convenience of this channel, okay?
Got it. And just trying to understand this a little bit clearer, the amount that you have on due on the credit card line, on the receivables, you receive from the credit card operators as they receive from students, meaning if the guy is financing on the credit card for, let's say, 6 installments, you don't receive everything up front in like the regular 28 days of the credit card procedure. You receive it throughout the 6 months. Is that right? I mean, just trying to understand how.
Yeah, that's the way it works. But again, the risk goes entirely to the credit card company,
sure.
Right? That's why they have this discount of 3%.
Of course. All right, then. Thank you very much.
Good to talk to you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. Our next question comes from Nicole Genvi of HNC Capital, and I'm sorry for the mispronunciation.
Right, no worries. Thank you so much for taking my call. I was wondering if you would be able to share the margins between the campuses as well as the distance learning and how they compare to prior quarter. My intent in asking is, you know, what kind of margin expansion can we expect going forward just because you'll be increasing the mix towards distance learning? If you can expand on that, that would be very helpful.
Oh, let me see if I understood, Mitchell. First question is the margins in distance learning and on-campus operations. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, and second one is the effect that this change that we are implementing now of not considering non-recurring items anymore will change our long-term guidance. Is that right?
Actually, my second question is more like, you know, my understanding the margin expansion going forward. So, yeah, so one aspect of the margin expansion will be all the improvements you are making. The other aspect will be just the mixed shift between distance learning and the campuses. So, you know, I just want to get your thoughts on the impact of distance learning on actual margin expansion going forward.
Okay. As for your first question, I mean, it's very hard for us to split these margins between distance learning and on campus because there is a, you know, big mixture here. Let me explain you why. We use our campuses here as distance learning centers. So there is a lot of subsides, you know, in both directions. For example, we do not pay rent for our distance learning operational centers, because they are already using our own campuses, right? On the other hand, we have a very complete structure for distance learning operations here based in Rio de Janeiro, and this also helps the on-campus operations by providing that 20% online content that is allowed by legislation. So there is a lot of cross-subsides going on, you know, back and forth, and we've decided here some time ago not to try to build this in a kind of a managerial way, because it would be a big trouble to us. So the way we measure here, we'd like to look at what is happening on a campus by campus basis, right, including how much margin they make in terms of distance learning and also on presential on campus education as well, and then they get their targets based on that, and then we take care. At the same time, we look here at our corporate costs and our distance learning operations that is centralized, and they have their own targets. We see them as cost centers, so they have their targets to keep reducing their costs while our campuses keep trying to improve their margins. So it's very hard for us to split. If we were to split, I would say that our own campus is operating at somehow close to whatever, 25-30% is on campus only without corporate costs, right? And our distance learning operation is close to 45% EBITDA margin by now. And then you have to subtract from these margins our corporate costs and also our marketing expenses that happen centralized. So I'm not sure if you understood that, but I mean, we don't like to split that because these operations help each other quite a lot, okay?
Yes.
As for margin expansions, I think we've talking a lot over the last quarters, we are very confident on that long-term margin expansion that we keep talking around 800 basis points. That means operating close to 20.5 EBITDA margin by 2014. You are right. There will be part of the contribution for this margin expansion will come from distance learning because, yes, it has a bigger margin. So as we increase the participation of distance learning in our mix, there will be naturally a margin expansion. And it is already embedded in our projections for 2014. And by the way, I think Eduardo didn't mention when he was talking, this change that we are implementing now in terms of disregarding non-recurring items from our EBITDA calculations does not change our guidelines for 2014. The reason is very simple. We never counted on that, right? Looking long term, we need to be able to get to this margin without getting any kind of help from non-recurring items, okay?
Got it. Thank you so much.
Our next question is from Bruno Gerino of Santander Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. You have been successfully applying price increases in your tuitions. So I would like to hear from you if you, in the competition, if your peers, your competitors, have been applying such increases as well, or have you been able to offer a differentiated product that is driving these price increases? This would be my question.
Hi, Bruno. Alcala here. You know, it's very dispersed. You know, we compete within 72 locations around Brazil with different competitors in each of those locations and with different competitive positions, right? Somewhere we are stronger, somewhere we are not that strong. The thing is that, as you see in our average ticket, we are adjusting prices to inflation. I would tell you that overall, most of our competitors are not doing that. Our sentiment and our sort of market intelligence parameters and mechanisms show that you know, most of our competitors are not doing that. We are doing that by choice because we want to increase prices, adjust them with inflation. And I think the fact that we were able to do that and together with that reach very strong growth results in terms of our admissions, that per se demonstrates that the quality of our programs and our services are being very well received by our target public because, you know, it's not that we increase prices in detriment to growth. No, we did the two things together, which to us is the great, great element and evidence that we're doing our job well, which is building a strong brand, delivering behind that brand, delivering a good product and service to our students, and being received and perceived like that. And the answer comes growth in volumes, coupled with growth in prices and at very, very disciplined acquisition costs. You know, the amount that we spend in sales and marketing are very disciplined, and I think that our acquisition costs is, if not the low, one of the lowest in the industries, and to me that represents the real power of the brand and the image within the market and our target public.
Okay, and on recurring items, of course, it's a very good initiative from you guys to do not adjust results anymore for this kind of expense. But I understand that M&A is still part of your strategy. So could you please give us a ballpark calculation of how much you would have from expenses when you do acquisitions in terms of expense per student? Do you have any kind of calculation like that?
You know, Bruno, that's a very important question, and the answer is no, we don't have. And why is that? You know, each and every acquisition is a particular, very specific situation. if it's a big company, if it's a small company, and then you may say, well, but per student, there could be or there should be a threshold. And my answer and my straight, honest question to you is still no, because a big company, organized company, there may be very low, and a company with not so big sort of fixings or restructurings to be made, may be a company where there's very limited amount of restructurings to be made, compared to a big company the same size, but very different in terms of organization, very different in terms of topography, in terms of how big the synergies are there, and the cost of the termination of contracts, termination of labor contracts, and so forth. Honestly speaking, you know, we don't feel comfortable about giving out some terms and some benchmarks. I know that may sort of make your job of projecting figures and so forth a little bit more challenging, but we prefer very, very honestly to tell you something. You know, we want and we will pursue the 20-something percent EBITDA margin in the next 3-4 years. That remains valid. That will be, and our commitment is to deliver that after any and whatever cost of restructuring whatsoever. But that, again, obviously we will and we may have some restructuring costs and whatever, and at the time they come, we will very openly disclose that to you and to all the market, and that will be within our EBITDA, because again, from now on, we are of the belief and strong exercise of the philosophy of one company, one EBITDA, and within our EBITDA, you're going to see that some, you know, one-off extraordinary restructuring costs that may go up, that may go down, and we will disclose that to the overall market. The thing is that as acquisition is such an important part of our strategy, and that remains very, very valid. So, calling non-recurring items, you know, some very small, teeny little restructuring items and non-recurring, quite honestly, we think it's not the right thing to do, because we're going to have non-recurring items for the next 4 years, so that is non-recurring, right? So that is why this will be all into the EBITDA. We will discuss and we will open figures to you all, and we will treat them, and you are going to have the liberty and the full disclosure to make your own analysis. And quite frankly speaking, you know, it's not even a matter of big track record or small track record in doing acquisitions. It is a matter of, you know, each and every acquisition has a given amount of restructuring efforts and costs, and that's why, you know, we prefer not to give out some kind of a theoretical benchmark, because again, that will be absolutely theoretical with not so much guaranteed alignment with the reality of a real business going forward.
Okay, perfect. Understood. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from Kajo Hunaki of Private Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Fine.
Good. Thanks, Kajo. I hope you got your release in time.
This time.
Absolutely.
That sounds great.
I appreciate that. Hey, I have about half a dozen questions. I don't know if you guys want to take it one by one or if I should just go ahead and list them out.
One by one.
Okay, very good. So first question, I know in 3Q of 2010, you guys mentioned that your acquisition cost per student was the lowest in the industry, stood at about 345 reais per student. What is it tracking? What is it tracking like right now as of 3Q 2011?
That's a great question. And the issue is, you know, we don't have it handy now. But it's simple. We define acquisition cost of students by the sum of the marketing spending in 3Q and 2Q, so second quarter and third quarter the sum of the advertising marketing expenditures divided by the number of students and newly enrolled. So, you know, I have my RR team looking at me because I made that question yesterday to them and they didn't answer me, and that's now you have the question. So it's just a matter of calculating that, and we may have it handy within some minutes. If you want to go to a next question, we may get back to that in a few minutes.
Not a problem. I appreciate it. It can't even wait. I can take it offline with Flavia later.
Okay.
Number two, can you guys further explain the reduction in students, the line of support, the 2,100 students not enrolled in class? I read the sentence a few times, but I didn't quite understand that reduction.
You're talking about the students. Let me understand.
Could you repeat the question, Kojo, please?
Of course. On page 4 of your release, you mention, third paragraph from the bottom, the strong enrollment volume in 3-11 allowed us to be more efficient when new opening classes for the semester in order to increase the average number of students per class, which reduced our base by about 2,100. I couldn't understand that sentence.
The point is that now that you are able to attract more students, we can raise the bar and try to allow only classes with more than, for example, 25 or 30 students to open, because every time there is an intake process, Kojo, we need to make this call. You know, there are 15 or 16 students up to go, ready to go. Are we going to open the class or not? The problem of opening classes with 16, 18, sometimes 20 students is that it goes well in the first, you know, two or three semesters, but then after the dropout over the course, this tends to give you a loss. So now that we are getting more students, we are able to be more restrictive on that. We are saying, you know what, now that we don't have that big pressure to get the students because the students are coming, instead of taking the risk of opening classes and then trying to deal with that, let's be more restrictive right away. Let's open classes only with, whatever, 25 or 30 students. It varies on a course-by-course basis and also on a place-by-place basis. So it's our decision. Let's, you know, leave these students out for now. It's going to give us some losses in terms of revenue now, but it's going to give us, if we are right, it's going to give us other savings maybe 2 years from now, okay?
Okay, so aren't you actually double counting, because the enrollment, the 45,500 students enrolled, doesn't that already indirectly include the fact that you didn't take on the 2,100?
I'm not sure how far that shows it. I think 45.5 is the total number, and then out of this number, 2.1 were not registered. So
okay, I see where you're saying.
It was only 43,000. Okay.
Okay.
The point is that why we give this information to you, because we want to show that we were able to attract 45,500 students.
I completely understand that.
Okay.
Moving on, question number 3. Your acquired companies are doing really well, and the EBITDA margin step up from 2Q sequentially went from 7% to 27% now in 3Q. I know I shouldn't look at it on a sequential basis, but what is there any kind of margin target that you guys have long-term for these acquired companies? And also a follow-up question on that. Is there any reason why just give me 1 second so I can find the name of the company. Your schedule on page 9, is it missing Fabern, or is that included in one of the companies here?
I didn't get your last question. You're looking on table on page 9, right?
Yep.
And then what's the point?
So your table on page 9 has actual FAO, Patern, and Concurso. Is it missing FABEC?
Oh, yes, because FABEC is now FABEC has been transferred to Estácio de Sá University. So now we are counting FABEC within our student base. But FABEC is so tiny. with 300 students that we just thought it wouldn't be worth to open its numbers here. But more than that, it is part now of Universidade Estácio de Sá. Okay? So that's the point. For your question on margin evolution, you're right. You should not look at second quarter against third quarter. You know that, and you know there is seasonality there. However, even if you take the seasonality effect out, you will see that there is a huge margin improvement, right? It is more true in Faculdade Atual, and why is that? Atual was bought in January, December and January, I'm not sure now. So it had the first semester to make a lot of adjustments in terms of back-office integration. For example, they now have the same technology systems that we have here, the SAP, for example. Our academic model is fully implemented there. And also, they by July, they implemented our academic model, right, for new students, incoming students. So they are way ahead in terms of margin expansion gains. As for targets, because we are required to go through the shareholders meeting every time there is an acquisition here, or at least we've been doing that so far, these are open numbers. I don't have on the top of my mind here. But I think Atual, for example, has a target to get to 25% EBITDA margin by 2014. They are getting more than 30% now. So they are way ahead of their targets. And why is that? Atual may be an exception. We will know, right? But they have a very good assets there. They have very good people. They were very happy when the deal with Estácio happened. So there was a very good integration. We, you know, get along very well with each other. So they are making, you know, full usage of everything they can here at Estácio. So they are speeding up integration of back office with our services center. They are speeding up their academic model on their own, right? As for the others, they are coming after them. We will see eventually in two or three quarters. We hope that they can catch up, okay?
Uh-huh.
Okay, this is Eduardo here. I would kindly ask you to keep to some more important questions, if I may, and you know we'll be more than glad to take a call with you afterwards, just so we give everybody opportunity to make further questions, right?
Absolutely, no problem. Let me sneak this one in. Is there any way you guys can start making transcripts available for all of us? I think it would set you guys apart completely from your competitors, and you guys provide so much useful information on the call, but sometimes we can only take notes. We can only take down notes so much.
Okay. And again, please don't hesitate to call us after that to go deeper into detail. By the way, I have the information of the acquisition cost of new students, which is spending marketing reais divided by admissions. Third quarter of 2010, I have the number here, is around at 3,391 reais. And then again, marketing advertising reais divided by total admissions. And the number for third quarter of 2011 is 390 reais. Coincidence or not, it's exactly the same number. So that meant that, you know, we spent the same amount of reais per student acquired, per student newly enrolled. And that was what I was mentioning before. You know, we did that. We increased prices. So, you know, we are absolutely growing based on the quality and the brand and quality perception of our platform, without making more investments per students or without having to dump our prices in the marketplace.
Eduardo, I might be wrong, but the number I had in front of me on page 2 of 3 quarter 2010 is 345.5 reais per enrolled student. I'll just follow up with Flavia after the call.
Yeah, great. Okay, please do that.
Will do. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
The next question is from Matthias Galais of Black Creek Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. I have two questions, one related to FIES. I understand that Croton said that 28% of their intakes were had FIES, and how that compared to you, and why the difference, and if you in the future expect and when FIES to lower the or to increase the renewal rates. That's one question, and the other one relates to working capital. If one adjusts for the seasonality, working capital was a bit worse, so higher this accounts receivable, sorry, was a bit higher this quarter. And I want to understand what's going on in terms of why is it increasing from the market perspective. Is it because your students are more levered? Is it because of competitive pressures? I want to understand what's going on. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hi. In terms of the FIES, you know, our percentage of either basic students or admissions is around 6-7%, which is not good, which is far from being satisfactory, and we acknowledge that, and we absolutely want to raise that. We are restructuring. We are changing our commercial activities. We are training our commercial people, and besides commercial people, we are including and involving teachers and faculty leaders in the process of selling FIES to students, be it new students, but most importantly, ongoing students in terms of decreasing the delinquency rates and so forth. So we want and we...
Okay. Sorry, all right. Okay, I will be back to the FIES question. Let me take on your second question while he gets back with some water. You're talking about working capital, and then this is Mel's. We'll talk a little bit about that, Matias. Working capital is pretty much in line with what happened in the second quarter. I understand there may be some seasonality because, yes, we could expect some kind of decrease in the third quarter because of interest and so forth. However, it's pretty much in line. It's been, you know, around 60 days our average time of receivables this year, which is not good. We don't like it. It's about 10 days higher than last year. If there is one thing that may explain that is increase of delinquency. You know, there is a kind of a situation in Brazil. It's not only our business, but, you know, the banks have been talking about that. Retail has been complaining about that as well. So it is happening everywhere. It is a trend in our country. We're not sure how far this is going to go, but there seems to be a consensus here that it has reached a top, a kind of a threshold, and now we should expect some reduction as time goes by. On the other hand, we are very, very, very active here inside our boundaries to deal with that situation. So now we have a lot of initiatives. I talked about some of them during my speech. You know, for example, blacklisting students, launching an educational campaign. So we hope that by doing that, we'll be able to hold this stable around, you know, the level they are right now. And then in the second moment, as we get more and more efficient here internally, we should expect a decrease in our days of receivable and therefore in our working capital requirements. Not to mention that at some point we need to get some external help to the sense that, you know, the delinquency rate in Brazil has to come down at some point. So we see this as our biggest challenge as of now. We've learned to deal with a lot of situations. This is just another one. We trust we will be in our way, and we trust that over the next quarters or so, we will have a lot of improvements in working capital as well. I think Eduardo is back on track here. I'll let him finish about FIES.
Sorry, I had some water here. And so back to FIES. We are below what we wanted to be in terms of the percentage of our students' base involved in FIES. We are working hard with our commercial teams and our teachers and our faculty leaders that have stronger contact and day-to-day contact with the students in terms of bringing them onto the FIES programs. We are working very, very closely with the Ministry of Education in trying to fix some obstacles or difficulties on the bureaucratic systems in order to make it easier. And besides that, we are gradually improving the eligibility of our programs to the FIES. As you know, some programs are not eligible for FIES given their recent evaluations and so forth. All in all, without exception, each and every of our programs that have been recently evaluated by the Ministry of Education in their, you know, on-the-ground evaluation committees and so forth, we've been increasing the grades that we are taking from these evaluation processes. And by increasing those grades, we turn that course into being eligible for FIES. So FIES, rest assured, Matthias, FIES is a big, big hockey stick here in terms of one of our goals, one of our priorities in going forward and increasing that.
Perfect. Thank you.
And since there seems to be no further questions, I'd like to turn the floor over to Mr. Eduardo Alcalay for his final remarks.
Okay, well, again, thank you all for being with us in this conference call. As I said, we're very happy and very enthusiastic about the results of the company so far, and more especially the prospects going forward, given the strong fundamentals that we are going through, given the strong victories and results, long-term sustainable results that we've reached. So we are very, very happy and very enthusiastic with the prospects of the company going forward. We look forward to meeting you. As we always say, our IR team remains at your disposal in order to clarify any further and more detailed question. Thanks again, everybody, and have a good day.
This concludes Espacio's conference call. You may now disconnect and have a good day.